Part three. Because the lead opinion finds only limited burdens on the right to vote, it avoids a hard look at the state's claimed interests. But having found the voter ID law burdens far from trivial, I have to make a rigorous assessment of the precise interests put forward by the state as justifications for the burden imposed by its rule and the extent to which those interests make it necessary to burden the plaintiff's rights. As Burdick indicates, the interests claimed to justify the regulatory scheme are subject to discount in two distinct ways. First, the generalities raised by the state have to be shaved down to the precise aspects of the claimed interests addressed by the law at issue. And even if the state can show particularized interests addressed by the law, those interests are subject to further discount depending on the extent to which they make it necessary to burden the plaintiff's rights. As the lead opinion sees it, the state has offered four related concerns that suffice to justify the voter ID law: modernizing election procedures, combating voter fraud, addressing the consequences of the state's bloated voter rolls, and protecting public confidence in the integrity of the electoral process. On closer look, however, it appears that the first two, which are really just one, can claim modest weight at best, and the latter two, if anything, weaken the state's case. Section A. The lead opinion's discussion of the state's reasons begins with the state's asserted interests in election modernization and in combating voter fraud. Although these are given separate headings, any line drawn between them is unconvincing. As I understand it, the effort to modernize elections is not for modernity's sake, but to reach certain practical or political objectives. In any event, if a proposed modernization were in fact aimless, if it were put forward as a change for change's sake, a state could not justify any appreciable burden on the right to vote that might ensue. Useless technology has no constitutional value. And in fact, that is not the case here. The state says that it adopted the ID law principally to combat voter fraud, and it is this claim, and not the slogan of election modernization, that warrants attention. Subsection 1. There's no denying the abstract importance, the compelling nature of combating voter fraud, but it takes several steps to get beyond the level of abstraction here. To begin with, requiring a voter to show photo identification before casting a regular ballot addresses only one form of voter fraud, in-person voter impersonation. The photo ID requirement leaves untouched the problems of absentee ballot fraud, which, unlike in-person voter impersonation, is a documented problem in Indiana, of registered voters voting more than once but maintaining their own identities in different counties or in different states, of felons and other disqualified individuals voting in their own names, of vote buying, or for that matter of ballot stuffing, ballot miscounting, voter intimidation, or any other type of corruption on the part of officials administering elections. And even the state's interest in deterring a voter from showing up at the polls and claiming to be someone he is not must in turn be discounted for the fact that the state has not come across a single instance of in-person voter impersonation fraud in all of Indiana's history. Neither the district court nor the Indiana General Assembly that passed the voter ID law was given any evidence whatsoever of in-person voter impersonation fraud in the state. This absence of support is consistent with the experience of several veteran poll watchers in Indiana, each of whom submitted testimony in the district court that he had never witnessed an instance of attempted voter impersonation fraud at the polls. It is also consistent with the dearth of evidence of any in-person voter impersonation in any other part of the country. The state responds to the want of evidence with the assertion that in-person voter impersonation fraud is hard to detect. But this is like saying the man who wasn't there is hard to spot. And to know whether difficulty in detection accounts for the lack of evidence, one at least has to ask whether in-person voter impersonation is, or would be, relatively harder to ferret out than other kinds of fraud, for example, by absentee ballot, which the state has had no trouble documenting. The answer seems to be no. There is reason to think that impersonation of voters is the most likely type of fraud to be discovered. This is in part because an individual who impersonates another at the polls commits his fraud in the open under the scrutiny of local poll workers who may well recognize a fraudulent voter when they hear who he claims to be. The relative ease of discovering in-person voter impersonation is also owing to the odds that any such fraud will be committed by organized groups such as campaigns or political parties rather than by individuals acting alone. It simply is not worth it for individuals acting alone to commit in-person voter impersonation, which is relatively ineffectual for the foolish few who may commit it. If an imposter gets caught, he is subject to severe criminal penalties. And even if he succeeds, the imposter gains nothing more than one additional vote for his candidate. Fraud by individual voters is a singularly foolish and ineffective way to attempt to win an election. Each act of voter fraud in connection with a federal election risks 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine in addition to any state penalties. In return, it yields, at most, one incremental vote. That single extra vote is simply not worth the price. In sum, fraud by individuals acting alone, however difficult to detect, is unlikely. And while there may be greater incentives for organized groups to engage in broad-gauged in-person voter impersonation fraud, it is also far more difficult to conceal larger enterprises of this sort. The state's argument about the difficulty of detecting the fraud lacks real force. Subsection 2. Nothing else the state has to say does much to bolster its case. The state argues, for example, that even without evidence of in-person voter impersonation in Indiana, it is enough for the state to show that opportunities for such fraud are transparently obvious in elections without identification checks. Of course they are, but Indiana elections before the voter ID law were not run without identification checks. On the contrary, as the Marion County Election Board informs us, time-tested systems were in place to detect in-person voter impersonation fraud before the challenged statute was enacted. These included hiring poll workers who were precinct residents familiar with the neighborhood and making signature comparisons, each effort being supported by the criminal provisions mentioned before. For that matter, the deterrence argument can do only so much work, since photo identification is itself hardly a failsafe against impersonation. Indiana knows this, and that's why in 2007 the state began to issue redesigned driver's licenses with digital watermarking. The state has made this shift precisely because, in the words of its BMV, individual inspection is not adequate to determine the authenticity of driver's licenses. Indeed, the BMV explains that the digital watermarks, which can be scanned using equipment that so far Indiana does not use at polling places, is needed to take the guesswork out of the inspection. So at least until polling places have the machines and special software to scan the new driver's licenses, and until all the licenses with the older designs expire, Indiana's law does no more than assure that any in-person voter fraud will take place with fake IDs, not attempted signature forgery. Despite all this, I will readily stipulate that a state has an interest in responding to the risk, however small, of in-person voter impersonation. I reached this conclusion, like others accepted by the court, because where a legislature has significantly greater institutional expertise, as for example in the field of election regulation, the court in practice defers to empirical legislative judgments. Weight is owed to the legislative judgment as such, but the ultimate valuation of the particular interest the state asserts has to take account of evidence against it as well as legislative judgments for it, certainly when the law is one of the most restrictive of its kind, and on this record it would be unreasonable to accord this assumed state interest more than very modest significance. Subsection 3. The anti-fraud rationale is open to skepticism on one further ground, what Burdick spoke of as an assessment of the degree of necessity for the state's particular course of action. 2 points deserve attention, the first being that the state has not even tried to justify its decision to implement the photo identification requirement immediately on passage of the new law. A phase-in period would have given the state time to distribute its newly designed licenses and to make a genuine effort to get them to individuals in need, and a period for transition is exactly what the Commission on Federal Election Reform, headed by President Carter and former Secretary of State Baker, recommended in its report. For the next two federal elections, until January 1, 2010, in states that require voters to present ID at the polls. Voters who fail to do so should nonetheless be allowed to cast a provisional ballot, and their ballot would count if their signature is verified. During this phase-in period, the report said, states would need to make efforts to ensure that all voters are provided convenient opportunities to obtain the required identification. The former president and former secretary of state explained this recommendation in an op-ed essay. Yes, we are concerned about the approximately 12% of citizens who lack a driver's license. So we propose that states finally assume the responsibility to seek out citizens to both register voters and provide them with free IDs that meet federal standards. States should open new offices, use social service agencies, and deploy mobile offices to register voters. By connecting IDs to registration, voting participation will be expanded. Although Indiana claims to have adopted its ID requirement relying partly on the Carter-Baker report, the state conspicuously rejected the report's phase-in recommendation aimed at reducing the burdens on the right to vote, and just as conspicuously fails even to try to explain why. What is left of the state's claim must be downgraded further for one final reason. Regardless of the interest the state may have in adopting a photo identification requirement as a general matter, that interest in no way necessitates the particular burdens the voter ID law imposes on poor people and religious objectors. Individuals unable to get photo identification are forced to travel to the county seat every time they wish to exercise the franchise, and they have to get there within 10 days of the election. Nothing about the state's interest in fighting voter fraud justifies this requirement of a post-election trip to the county seat instead of some verification process at the polling places. In briefing this court, the state responds by pointing to an interest in keeping lines at polling places short. It warns that if election workers, a scarce resource in any election, must attend to the details of validating provisional ballots, voters may have to wait longer to vote, and it assures us that nothing deters voting so much as long lines at the polls. But this argument fails on its own terms. For whatever might be the number of individuals casting a provisional ballot, the state could simply allow voters to sign the indigency affidavit at the polls, subject to review there after the election. After all, the voter ID law already requires voters lacking photo identification to sign at the polling site an affidavit attesting to proper registration. Indeed, the state's argument more than fails. It backfires in implicitly conceding that a not insignificant number of individuals will need to rely on the burdensome provisional ballot mechanism. What is more, as the district court found, the voter ID law itself actually increases the likelihood of delay at the polls, since any minor discrepancy between a voter's photo identification card and the registration information may lead to a challenge, the opportunities for presenting challenges have increased as a result of the photo identification requirements.